Welcome back, everyone, to Point of Sale, the podcast where we break down great retailers, including the data and technology that move their supply chain. Happy to be back, and we've got some interesting stuff we're going to dive into. And, of course, a wonderful guest. He's been a guest on the show a couple times now, but Jack Dalio, a FreightWaves journalist, has got his own show coming up. So we'll highlight that in the second half of this show. But I thought today we should go back to the literal roots of this show. We break down the great retailers and the data and the technology, right, that move their supply chains. And I thought, let's focus on different individuals, different companies, different retailers, and even the providers for delivery for retailers, and figure out every piece of technology that's empowering them. I think that's what's really interesting as we do research into the companies that we love to purchase from and figure out exactly how their supply chains work. There's a number of different partnerships, a number of technologies that really pushes and drives all of these businesses. And I think people sometimes don't realize how much of an iceberg the situation is. You know, you just see that one person at the end of the day that's delivering it to your doorstep, right? But there's so many different partners between when you click that button to say, okay, let's purchase this. And even more so when we're searching and using search engines to find the different things we want to buy. And then bringing that all the way to that front door, there can be multiple handoffs, multiple technology and data handoffs, and a number of partners that it takes to literally get that to you. So in a new segment I want to call Who's Powering Who, we're going to dive into the different technologies that are powering powerful individuals within our space, whether it's e-commerce, retailers. And in this situation, it's that delivery person that's bringing it to you. We're going to focus on someone we've talked about in the past, DoorDash. DoorDash in particular, I wanted to look at because we actually had Jack on the show a couple weeks ago when we dove into a lot of these on-demand delivery services. Some that are doing quite well, like DoorDash, some that are losing their value quite quickly, like Grubhub, and the difference between the two and the strength of the market as it continues to grow. So looking at DoorDash as a whole, from 2020 to 2021, they actually saw a revenue growth of about 70%. And that allowed them to gain about 60% of the total on-demand delivery space market share. Well, how exactly did they go about doing that? What can we learn from them, right? Well, the first thing, and like anyone who's investing or running a business, diversifying their portfolio. They started diversifying the number of delivery opportunities that they would be able to give to the carriers and the drivers within their network. It's much like a lot of the brokerage and softwares that we look at when we look at full truckload or LTL, right? You have to have a certain amount of business lanes, loads available to attract a certain amount of drivers to make that business model work, and vice versa, right? You have to have a good amount of fulfillment providers and delivery drivers to be able to service that large group of delivery opportunities. So they focused on four areas. We're going to focus on four areas within this, and that's retail, restaurant tech, supply chain tech, and employee benefits. Employee benefits might seem like a tricky one, but we'll get to that. If we could pull up that full map really quick of exactly all of those different providers, you'll see how strategic they were. Green is showing you the acquisitions that they've made. Purple, more of a pinkish color, is just partnerships, right? In order to fulfill this full market that they're trying to build. And lastly, blue over there in Flink is their investments over that time. So they've got their handfuls in a number of areas. So let's dive into each of them individually, starting with retail. If we can focus on that retail image very quickly, you'll see on here that they spent a lot of time getting outside of just the normal restaurant delivery. They started working with large warehouse, wholesale grocery providers like Albertsons, BJ's is a new one as well. Dollar General is a great one that they've just jumped into. And then a lot of beauty and home products, Lush, love Lush, who doesn't like a bath bomb. Ultra Beauty's in there as well. That's a new partnership they've opened up with. Rite Aid, Walgreens, different pharmacies, things of that nature. Even opening up more into different retailers. JCPenney's, that's one that we didn't think that would make it out of the pandemic, and look at them here. You also have, I believe, Bed Bath & Beyond is another big one as well. So they decided, let's step out a little bit of the restaurant. Let's start finding different lanes, different deliveries that we can start to push into our marketplace, making this a better and more attractive app for our drivers, right? The second one, and this is where stuff gets really interesting, because you see these retailers, right, when we go and purchase or we jump into the DoorDash app. Well, this next one we're going to look at is restaurant tech, and I'll dive into exactly how this works. So restaurant tech is a number of like white label technologies that a number of restaurants use. So maybe they don't fully implement the services that DoorDash have been able to build itself. They use one of these individual producers. Well, that connects them directly to the delivery network that DoorDash has built. So that shows you right there, there's a handful of them that they partnered with, big ones as well, big ones that most POS iTouch is a huge one. Chobotics, Bebot are large ones as well. That Bebot is actually was acquired by Grubhub. So that's DoorDash. So that's actually underneath their own company now. Chowly and POS iTouch are ones I guarantee you've seen before. It's a lot of times connected into the restaurant's website. So it feels like you're directly ordering from the restaurant, but it's actually using the network of DoorDash. And then Chowbotics as well. They actually just announced, though, that they're ceasing operations of that because it's focused mostly on salads. It just wasn't a great growth from there, but also allowed them to grow their portfolio of restaurants as well. Next, we've got supply chain and delivery technology. And this is more of the futuristic aspect of DoorDash, right? When we go into these kind of recessionary periods, we want to look at who's really still focused and investing in the future. Well, if we bring up that delivery tech on, you'll see a number of these are... we'll leave the flow spaces in the rooms for later, but when you're looking at Flink, when you look at Scotty, Wolt, Cruise, these are autonomous delivery providers for the future. So they're partnering with them in order to, you know, be able to provide that autonomous delivery when it's needed. And a lot of interesting technologies are behind these companies. For instance, Scotty Labs has a remote-controlled self-driving car. LVL5 is actually a high-res driving map. So think about how quickly, how much faster they could deliver if they have the ability to reach these autonomous vehicles within their network and have the best mapping software that their AI can continue to get smarter on. And when you're looking at ultra fast, Wolt and Flink are two big ones in Europe. And then e-commerce fulfillment. So FlowSpace and Vroom Delivery are big ones. FlowSpace, we've actually, I think, was my first episode here on the show. And they help e-commerce companies find that last mile driving network. DoorDash is a perfect example of who they can reach out to. Now, we've had episodes before that also talk about the fact that it's really difficult to find good gig economy workers. You have to have bonuses. You have to have some type of structure, some type of incentive to outbeat your competitors. Well, they focus their time on there as well. If we bring up the employee aspect, they have Acorns, which they actually use to help recruit drivers by offering investment bonuses. Payfair is a quick payment system for them to allow their drivers to get paid faster for a small fee. And then you look at Rippling, which is their payroll and benefits company. They give out a lot of perks to their drivers and to their remote workers as well, including free lunches. And then the icing on the cake, and one that's not actually on the map, is their ultra-fast delivery future, the AI behind the company, the more of the actual hardware behind the technology is NVIDIA. NVIDIA is one of their biggest partners, and they're one of the most relied upon hardware companies out there today. So a beautiful partner for them to be with, looking forward into the future as well. And then of course, Afterpay. They also have Afterpay as their partnership. So what they can do is offer their DoorDash Pass for the full year, but they can actually split it up into multiple payments. I think it's like three or four through Afterpay, making it just a little bit easier to grab that one more customer. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how they've gone about building that 60% of their market share and has really risen to the point where they're a leader within that on-demand delivery space. And I mean, that's over 10 different partnerships that they've built and that they focused on. And it shows you right there that it's not just about finding the right driver. It's not just about having the technology in-house. It's about the partnerships and the stickiness. And the bigger the network, the more you're going to be able to offer both parties on the supply and on the demand side. And enough about that. We'll have another one of those who's powering who later on in the year. But today I wanted to, of course, bring on Jack Dalio. He is a journalist with FreightWaves. He's been on the show a number of times, but we've got some big news because guess what? Jack has a new show called The Drop Zone that is now airing on FreightWaves TV. Jack, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Grace. Thanks for having me on again.
Of course. I love this intro, by the way, we're looking at. Props to the FreightWaves creative team, just constantly blowing our minds every single day. I think that's the best part of the show, right? Is the first day you get to see your graphics. So that's a good one. And I saw the first episode. It went really well. And you have like top drone providers on day one. So I love how you set the standard high for yourself. But tell us a little bit about the show. Is it just a drone show? And what are you hoping the audience gains from it?
So I think calling it just a drone show is a little bit of an oversimplification. So for those who don't know, I cover last mile delivery for FreightWaves and Modern Shipper. And drones have really started to emerge in that space as sort of one of the technologies of the future. You know, before the pandemic, we didn't really have any sort of commercial drone services, but now they're starting to pop up all over the U.S. In the cities and the suburbs. And I don't think that people realize that drones are being used to deliver just about everything, not just food and drinks. You know, a lot of drone delivery services have made headlines for delivering things like chicken wings and cups of coffee, but they're also delivering convenience items, health and wellness, parcels, even medical supplies like vaccines. And they're doing it in regions like sub-Saharan Africa, in addition to the U.S. So my goal with this show is to sort of highlight the parts of drone delivery that are less talked about, but that I think are going to play a big role in our space going forward. So my hope is that people will come away with a little bit more appreciation for the creativity that's going into solving this last mile problem. And I think as time goes on, you'll start to see more and more retailers using drones.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting talking to people about drones. I feel like a lot of the pushback I still hear is a lot of like what you report that is like not existent in regards to like, you know, is it just going to be blown away in the wind? Like, how are they going to like navigate tall buildings and structures? And it's past that. It's way past that at this point. And I like that you're going to be able to provide the audience with a true idea of where the market is today and where it's going in the near future. I think people believe it's farther away than it actually is. And there's some really good players in the industry that you're going to be able to give a platform to speak on that as well. And speaking of that, I mean, just like I said, day one, you had some pretty heavy hitters on the first episode. Tell us a little bit about that episode and your guests as well.
Yeah, I did. I was fortunate enough to have two really amazing guests come on for the first episode. It was very exciting. This first episode, it took a look at humanitarian drone deliveries. So these are companies that are delivering things like blood samples, vaccines, test kits, prescription medications. And I wanted to focus on this because I don't think people realize the scale at which drones are operating already, which you kind of alluded to. So the first guest I had on, her name is Okoma Moronu. She's the head of aviation, regulatory, and legal affairs at Zipline. So that's a Bay Area-based drone firm. They've been flying in sub-Saharan Africa and countries like Ghana and Rwanda for a couple of years now. So one of the main things that Okoma and I discussed is a new system that Zipline released. It's meant to help drones avoid crashes, but it's a little bit different than the typical system that drones use. So a lot of times they will be equipped with cameras or other visual sensors like lasers and machine vision to help them kind of see their surroundings. But Zipline's solution, it's called detection and avoidance. It uses sound instead. It's fully acoustic. So the drone is, it's kind of like a bat almost using echolocation. Yeah. And it sends out these audio signals and they bounce back and it can use those to sort of paint a picture of its environment. And that helps the drone avoid things like buildings, power lines, and even other drones. So we also talked about some of the technology that allows the drone to take off and land all by itself, which is really important for medical drone deliveries because it reduces the amount of time that the drone is on the ground. And then for the second half of the episode, I had on Dave Merrill. He's the CEO of Elroy Air. It's another Bay Area-based drone company. But they're more focused on longer range deliveries in the middle mile. Their flagship drone, it's called the Chaparral. Dave, he likes to refer to it as a cargo drone. So that drone can carry up to 500 pounds of payload, and it can travel up to 300 miles in a single trip. So Elroy recently started doing humanitarian deliveries through this partnership with this new company called Air Logistics, spelled AYR. They're based in London. So Dave and I, we talked about how, interestingly enough, they didn't really need to modify the Chaparral to do these medical drone deliveries. The big piece of tech that we talked about was the cargo hold. So unlike a lot of other drones, Elroy's cargo hold, it's big. I can hold up to 500 pounds like I mentioned. But it's also fully detachable from the drone. So that enables really quick loading and unloading. Which is, of course, really important for medical drone deliveries. So it can help to reach rural or really hard to reach locations where a lot of times people need that help the most there. So both of my guests, they had a ton of interesting stuff to say. You don't want to miss it. You should check it out on our website or on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Yeah, no, it's really good, and it's even that perfect example, right? Like people don't really have an idea of that part of the technology, right? It's in their head. It's like, okay, how are we going to fly an item in the air from point A to point B? But you're right. It's also, how are we loading it? Are we unloading it in the same way that we're loading the product originally? What type of environment are we flying through? Is it a more of a rural area or is it an urban area? And how is that impacted? Is it going to be self-flown? Is it going to fly with the help of someone at a location somewhere? There's so many questions that can be answered. So I'm sure you're going to have amazing content coming up. And I guess from your perspective, is there any like dream guests that you are hoping to get on or future episodes that you are excited to start planning?
Well, I can say that this next coming episode, which will air next month, it'll focus on last mile drone deliveries in the suburbs. So these are companies that are airdropping deliveries directly into your backyard, which in my opinion is really where drone delivery has a chance to shine, is in those suburbs, in those areas where people are a little bit more spread out and there's not really buildings in the way. So that'll be the focus of the next episode. But looking ahead, I'm hoping to get maybe some even bigger players on the show. Amazon has been in the news a little bit recently. They recently confirmed that they'll be finally launching their Prime Air drone deliveries in California and now Texas as well later this year. That comes after about a decade or so of promises and a lot of failed test crashes. So I'd love to get someone from Amazon on to maybe talk about some of the challenges that they've faced, maybe some other bigger players like Wing, which is a company that's run by Alphabet, or Flight Forward from UPS. But for the most part, I think I want to focus on some of the more niche companies that have perfected maybe one aspect of drone tech. For example, on the infrastructure side, a company like DroneDeck or Matternet comes to mind. These are companies that are building either mailboxes or sort of nests, landing places for these drones, and sort of building the technology that allows those landings to happen without a person flying them. So those are maybe a couple of other topics that I want to take a look at in the future.
Well, let me ask you this too. Have you ever flown a drone? Are you just a writer and fan of them? Or have you gotten your hands on one? And what was that experience like?
I can't say I've ever flown a delivery drone. A recreational one, sure. But for the most part, I'm a drone delivery admirer, not really a user.
Yeah. I say I've flown one once, and this goes back to how all this is going to work. Takeoff went great, landing not so hot. So I could get it up in the air, and I cannot guarantee it'll get delivered cleanly. And that's like, I think I saw you once write about like I think Starbucks was doing drone deliveries, and the whole time I'm just like imagining a Frappuccino like flying in the wind. And that's, and once again, not how it's going to work. So it's going to be fun to have you actually have dedicated time to show us how Frappuccinos are going to fly in the air in our near future as well. And I want to play a fun game. We played a game with you here before called What Kind of Consumer Are You? And I said, no, we gotta focus this a little bit more. And one thing that I really kind of nerd out on, I have a couple of like subscriptions and stuff that I like to dive into is patents and just IP in general. And I figured, well, let's pull some drone patents, drone technology patents, and see how well you are versed in this, and give you an opportunity to make some guesses on exactly who these companies could be on various drone technology patents that are out there today. This first one, I feel like you'll get. I will give you a hint. I'm pretty certain you've wrote about this, but this is a delivery van with no man. Primary vehicles are equipped with cameras or other sensors, as well as control systems that generate or transmit instructions for causing secondary vehicles, such as a drone. These vehicles are hence able to travel on selected courses and speeds. Your choices are Walmart, Amazon, eBay, or the U.S. Postal Service.
I gotta say, Grace, this one sounds a lot like a patent I wrote about that came from Amazon. I'm gonna go with Amazon.
You are right. Yes, that is Amazon's patent. So good. I was like, I'm gonna give him one. I know that he definitely knows. Good job on that one. We're gonna get a little bit trickier now. A drone camera on a smartphone. So this will basically, your camera has the ability to detach itself from a smartphone, and it would be like an extra piece and would fly into the air and enable users to take photos from their selfies from the air and all that jazz. Who owns this patent? We have Amazon, Verizon, Vivo, or NVIDIA.
Ooh, that's a little bit harder. just based on the idea that the drone is coming from a phone, I'm going to go with Verizon here.
It is Vivo, which is like more of a Samsung phone provider. And that was a trick because we all have Apple phones, right? So, I will say these get harder. So I started with the easier one. It's going to get a little bit more difficult. Drones for virtual noise cancellation. So this patent discloses a networked system of drones having a sound cancellation unit, which forms a virtual noise cancellation barrier in crowded areas. And this arrangement of drones will cancel the ambient noise of the environment and provide the users a virtual barrier in a noise-free zone. Who owns this patent? Walmart, Live Nation, Sony, or Amazon?
Okay, so you're basically creating soundproof rooms. It almost sounds like you're creating a recording studio. So I would have to go with, what were the four options? Yeah, Live Nation.
Walmart. It is Sony. And you're right. You're right. You are creating like your own like outdoor listening studio. I mean, that one's cool. If that's real. That's insane. So, I'll send you this list afterwards so you can have all the context and all that jazz. But I read that one and I'm like, that's so you're literally like creating like in my head, I see like a SpongeBob bubble, like Sandy's bubble in real time. It's like, that's crazy. I can't believe that would work. All right. The two more for you. Let's see. Okay. Getting more back into the tech that we write about. This is a biometric identification from the air. So this patent describes a method of increasing reliability of face recognition using machine learning models and analysis of images captured by drones mounted imaging sensors from the air. So basically, they'll be able to see you from the air and know exactly who you are. Amazon, Walmart, Lockheed Martin, or NVIDIA?
That sounds kind of scary, Grace. I'm not going to lie. I'm gonna take a guess here and go Amazon. I've just got a gut feeling that this is maybe something Amazon would be working on.
It's actually a company acquired by NVIDIA, AnyVision Interactive Technologies. So, you know, no, thank God, because I don't really want Amazon having the ability to see my face from the sky anyways. Unfortunately, we're out of time today. Ran through that game real quickly. We'll bring it out again and do it in the future. Everyone, go head to tv.freightwaves.com. Go check out Jack's show, and he will have a new episode coming out next month as well. And you can listen to it anywhere you listen to podcasts. As well, subscribe to this, subscribe to his show. Enjoy the rest of your week. I'll see you next week.